You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News and the Fieldhouse. And today, the Pacers did it. They climbed back to 500 since Victor Oladipo's return, which sounds like a nothing accomplishment. But given how terribly they started after he returned, that's a huge deal. They're now 7-7 since January 29th after their 116-111 win over the Spurs. And normally Adam is the game recap guy on the show, but he is out with an injury. That's what I'll call it. So I'm on recap duty today. And I get to talk about a game, and I get to talk about a player. I want to talk about Aaron Holiday and a little standing stuff. I'm obsessed with the standing stuff. I got to stop. But just generally, the Pacers are in fifth in the East now. After this win, they jumped Philly in the standings because they own that tiebreaker. So good time to get back on track and start getting some wins. They've now won 5 of 6 and 4 in a row. They are really rolling. And they took down the mighty Spurs. It was an interesting game because, for those who missed it, right at the start, the Spurs looked fantastic. They jumped out to the fastest 10-0 lead ever. And it wasn't really like they were just destroying the Pacers or anything early. They were in a zone, and the Pacers actually got two good looks from three up early, and Sabonis was posting up. The Spurs were really missing their centers inside, so Sabonis had Drew Eubanks, I think, Eubanks on him. I don't know how to say his last name, and I watched the entire game on him, which was an easy matchup for him. So they got good looks early, they just didn't make them. They had this early 10-0 hole they had to dig themselves out of, and it even lasted until late in the first. But once the starters came back in the second, the bench did a good job. You know, the bench didn't play well in the third and the second half, but the bench did a good job in the second quarter and late first holding the bleeding where it was. You know, the Pacers were down 10, they got it to like 5, and then 10, and then 5, and the bench just kept it in that range. And then once the starters came back in, they played great the rest of the game from the middle of the second quarter on. Malcolm Brogdon specifically was tremendous in this game. We'll talk about him in a minute. But because the bench was able to do so okay in that stretch, the Pacers were able to take a huge lead. I think they got up to like 15 or 14 in the mid to late third. And then they gave away the lead actually when the bench struggled. But because they didn't, you know, really let the lead get away from them in the first half, they were able to stay up and win and put it away in the fourth. They had a huge, huge second quarter, right, with the bench starting it off, and then the starters were finishing it. They scored 40 points that quarter. They actually got outscored in all other three quarters of this game. They got outscored by 8 in the first quarter, by 1 in the third, and by 3 in the fourth. But because they were so solid in that second quarter, they were able to get out of here with a win. So it was good for the bench to have that stretch. And really, the guy I want to look at for that stretch before I talk about the starters playing really well is Doug McDermott. Doug McDermott is continuing his insane road McDermott, home McDermott thing that happened last year. He was 4-5 from deep in his first three, maybe his first four. And really in that second quarter, he hit three in a row in really quick succession to get the team off and running. And the Spurs actually shifted. They were really heavier zone until McDermott was finding all these spaces in it. And they were like, oh, we can't keep up with this. And they had to change it. And then all of a sudden now Sumner can get to the basket a little better. McConnell can shake his way into the paint. They're getting better screens from Turner. Turner had a really nice game. I'll get to him in the fourth in a minute. So really that big stretch with McDermott's threes changed this whole game and let the Pacers have the dominant quarter that held them to win. In the second half, you know, they only lost by 4 in the second half. I don't want to say, they played them pretty much even. But this is where the starters really shined. And Brogdon had a fantastic game. He was the Pacers' best player. It's really good to see him bouncing back in the way he did. He finished with 26 points, and it was the quietest 26 points ever. He really spread them out over the course of the whole game. There was rarely a time where you thought, oh, they have to give it to Brogdon, he's hot right now, or anything like that. And then you look at the end, he has 26 points, 6 assists, and 6, or 7 assists, excuse me, and 6 rebounds. He was really everywhere in this basketball game. And it looks like to me, and I said this on our weekly show, he had a lot of struggles with that layup where he gets in real deep and then kind of flicks it up and in. He had a lot of trouble with that for a month. He got a bunch of those to go in this game. That shot Adam referenced, I also saw he was missing a lot over that struggling stretch that he comes around the screen and takes a 15-footer the Darren Collison shot, right? I hated it when Collison did it because his release is really slow and because he was a monster three-point shooter. Brogdon hasn't been a monster three-point shooter, and he's been better at that shot. So it's a little bit more comfortable, although I still don't love it. But he's knocking him down again recently, and he had two of his five threes, including a huge one late in the third quarter. He was just fantastic scoring the ball over the whole game, and really the Spurs' lack of height at guard allowed him to do well. And then their guards are really fast, so he could stay out there on D. They outscored the Spurs by 15 with him out there, second highest of anybody, Aaron Holiday being first. So he had a really nice game. A lot of credit to Brogdon. But let's, I guess both big men can do their own segment, so I'll wait to do that. And then Warren, of course, quiet every game, 23 points. And what I really want to talk about, Warren, 23 points on 14 shots, by the way, very impressive, hit half his threes. Warren did an amazing job on DeMar DeRozan in this basketball game. DeMar finishes with 10 points on 10 shots, only got to the line for three free throws, seven assists, only one turnover. So what you could tell early, and actually in the first quarter it was really killing the Pacers, the Spurs hit eight of their first nine threes, believe it or not. That's why it made the bench run, keeping them in this game, so impressive. What they were doing is the Spurs would hammer DeRozan, and he would try to get to his spot or get to a spot where he can set up someone with a pass, and Warren would stay with him, right? So when they would send the double, someone would be open. But that's why the Spurs were getting all these open threes. But all of a sudden, Warren was doing a good enough job containing him one-on-one. They could send a little less help, which helped them be crisper with their rotations, get out easier on these shooters. And knowing that DeRozan's going to really struggle, he didn't even score in the first half. He had 0 points at halftime. All 10 of his points came in the second half. They didn't, you know, that helped just a little bit more everybody else when they don't have to help as much. I mean, that's a microcosm of defense in general. If one guy can shut down the other team's best player, it's easier to guard the ancillary players. And Warren did a great job on DeRozan in this instance, in that example. And early, again, they really wanted to help and slow down DeRozan early. They did a great job, and all of a sudden they were able to recover these shooters. Trey Lyles finished 4 of 7 from deep. He hit his first three. Patty Mills, I think, hit his first three, maybe just the first two. He was 6 for 11. He was on fire from deep. Bryn Forbes, I think, hit his first two. And all those guys really struggled to hit him down the stretch because schematically they could get away with DeRozan just being shut down by Warren. So Warren, I mean, I don't know if you haven't read my article on him about his scoring. It was I really thought it turned out good, but I focused on his scoring, but I could write a whole other article about his defensive improvements. I mean, he's talked about it. Other guys have talked about it. Coaches have talked about it. He's just taken such a big leap on that end. And in this game, really, I mean, DeMar averages 20-something a game. He only scored 10. I mean, that's the difference right there. They only won by 5. So he played fantastic. He deserves a lot of credit. But I haven't talked about either big man hardly. And now I want to do that. So let's take a break, talk about the big men and how they were able to dominate the Spurs in their own way. It's fun to talk about Sabonis and Turner when I don't have to say Sabonis or Turner. You know, I could say and how they complemented each other and were once again both integral in the Pacers winning this game. Domas, of course, 5 assists, second most on the team in this game. It's what he does as a big man. 4 of 10 shooting. He did not score very well, which surprised me because LaMarcus Aldridge was out for the Spurs and Jakob Poeltl was out for the Spurs. So their centers, again, like I'm going to say this guy's name wrong, Drew Eubanks, something like that. He played 16 minutes. They have this guy, Chimezie Metu, in the G League, who they didn't even call up. So their backup center was basically Rudy Gay, right? Trey Lyles, really. Trey Lyles played 36 minutes. And they even had Rudy Gay on Sabonis at times. That's why I said Rudy Gay. But they had no center rotation at all. So to me, it was just going to, this game was going to be simple. As soon as, even with Eubanks in the game, it just pounded to Sabonis, let him create from the post. And his 5 assists shows that that was the case, but he could not get the scoring up. And some of that, against a zone that's not really there, right? He has to flash up to the free throw line, to the slot, whatever, to create opportunities, keep the ball moving. But against man, he couldn't really get it going for like 3 whole quarters. The Spurs really did a good job of limiting what he could do around the basket in this game. In the fourth, he just took over. I think all 4 of his made, he might have had 1 make before the fourth, but I think most of his made shots from the fourth. He had a 9-0 personal run to get the Pacers back in the lead after the Spurs stole it away. And that was huge. And that, you know, really, that's all-star stuff, right? That's what you want your all-star to do. No matter what's happened to them over the course of the game, whether they've been awesome, terrible, somewhere in between, down the stretch, they can dominate a matchup in a way that will let them score. And I know that the Spurs, again, had their best big men out of this game. And if they had them, maybe this game goes differently. But I mean, he dominated his matchup, and that's all you need him to do. And when he would miss, he'd get his own rebound, put it back up. He got to the line for 8 free throw attempts. Pacers deserve a ton of credit. They shot really well and got to the line a lot in this game. Sabonis really turned his game around in the fourth quarter when they needed him to, and that's the leader they need him to be. If he's going to continue to be all-stars in season's future and continue to be trusted to get the ball down the stretch, he has to be able to score like that, and he did. And now Miles, who did not hit a clutch three in this game, but did hit 2 free throws to ice it. They were huge. I think they were up 3 Brogdon got it to 5 maybe, when he hit them. But really, his thing this time, he did have a clutch play to win them the game. They were up 3 with somewhere between 30 and 40 seconds left in the possession started, and the Spurs throw it to Bryn Forbes in the corner. And it's kind of semi-transition-ish. And Miles Turner just flies in and runs him off the three-point line. It was super impressive. Sabonis rotates in. Forbes has to kick it out. The Spurs kind of reset. Patty Mills drives, gets to, like, the free throw line. He's got a decent look, but not good because Miles Turner's right there. So he flips over to Trey Lyles, who's coming in from the wing. And Miles just kind of rotates his hips, and all of a sudden he's got a pretty good angle to block the shot. And he got away with a little foul, but he got a huge block on Trey Lyles. And the ball went out of bounds. They called it off Turner. I think it hit Lyles' foot there, but we'll call it a makeup for the missed foul call. Only 0.2 on the clock, so the Spurs threw it in and actually kind of shot it so that there was a shot clock violation. Huge block to seal the game. Pacers got fouled every possession the rest of the way. Didn't have to, you know, get a last-second shot, get a buzzer beater, because they did play such good defense. The clock went below 24, so they would have got the last shot. Just really fantastic of him to run Forbes off with time on the clock and then to recover to the position to make Mills pass and then turn from that and actually block the shot to seal the game and hit the free throws. He was really good at the end. Again, of course, his defense was needed this whole game. I think a lot of the Spurs run in the fourth to get the lead was when Turner – actually, I don't think. I know a lot of the Spurs run to get their lead back in the fourth was when Turner was out. He came back in, changed the whole game. And then the third, when he was really good this game, his three wasn't even that impressive. He only made 1 3. He had 5 shots in the paint because I don't know what the deal was with coverages or anything. And some of this is just, again, the Spurs had no centers in this game. But, you know, Warren would get in a sticky situation, and then Miles Turner would just dive in from the weak side or from the top of the key. Bang, he would be open for a bucket inside and he'd score. Or, you know, Brogdon, the pick and roll with Sabonis didn't work. Oh, look, there's Sabonis under the basket. Bang. He was cutting into space under the rim really, really fantastically in this basketball game. He had one possession where Sabonis actually had Bryn Forbes on him after a switch, and they threw it to Turner to try to get the entry pass. It wasn't there because the weak side help was right behind Sabonis. So Turner dribbled to the middle, drew the help away from Sabonis, and then tossed it into him inside, and he drew. Like, he played a really smart and technically sound basketball game, and then still came up with his clutch play. Him and Sabonis were both really fantastic when it mattered. Both made really good plays over the course of the game in their own way and showed why, you know, they're both really good in their own way and how they can help the Pacers win both when they share the court and when they don't. So it was good to see those guys do well in this game. The Pacers needed every bit of contribution they got from everybody tonight, and those two guys were a big part of it. So they'll keep rolling. They'll keep taking all these good Sabonis and Turner games. If Turner keeps having a clutch play every game, we might have to keep talking about him. I mean, there's no way to avoid it. But I want to highlight a player who I haven't talked about yet. He started at shooting guard in this game, Aaron Holiday, and not even about just this one game, but Aaron Holiday in general. So let's talk about some Aaron Holiday, and then I'll get you guys out of here. So something really struck me in the locker room after the Spurs-Portland game last Thursday. You know, everybody was talking about, you know, Miles hits this three, and then, Sabonis with a great read, and you know, everybody really stepped up to win this game. They didn't play that awesome, but they won. Great. You know, the rotation was figured out, all that. Awesome. So then Malcolm Brogdon is up. And I don't remember which reporter asked him during his media availability after the game, you know, what changed in the second half rotation that worked. And he immediately was like, Aaron Holiday should be an everyday player. Malcolm Brogdon just said that unprompted. No one asked. I don't remember if someone asked him about Aaron specifically or not, but he said, you know, the way Aaron, this is paraphrasing. I could throw the quote in here, but I won't. He basically said, you know, Aaron's been awesome this year for us, where he sometimes has to sit out 3 or 4 games in a row and then is thrown into the starting lineup, and his role's been really inconsistent, but like, it's his time now. Like, Lamb's out for the year. He's got to be playing every game. He's too good not to. He has paid his dues effectively. And one, I think that's really powerful coming from the team leader, the point guard. I think he's bragging to the captain. I forget. But I thought that was really powerful and interesting just to hear one of the team's, you know, more vocal guys say something like that about him. And two, I totally agree, given the rotation, that he should be playing every day. And Vic was out in this game. I mean, I got to the third segment, of course, saying that. It hardly mattered in the final result. But so he started it. But even in those bench games, and I know in the game since that game, I guess Jakar played in Cleveland too, but Nate's gone a little cute with the Jakar. In the first half of that Portland game, he went with Jakar and then Justin Holiday at the two. And Justin Holiday has talked about, on occasion, the two being his natural position. But I think in the modern NBA, he's a better four than two. But anyway, so Nate kind of went big with that Jakar lineup. And Jakar had a lot of energy. I think in the Hornets game did go really well. But, I mean, everything was working in the Hornets game. The Hornets are terrible. The Portland was a lot better. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, man, Jakar's limitations are really on display. And not that he's not great, but Aaron's better. Aaron can create his own shot. He can be really speedy and make stuff happen on his own. He doesn't need to be a part of the team ecosystem. Jakar's a better defender. Aaron's a better overall player. So I agree. Aaron should be playing every game at this point. And I think that is now officially fully realized, right? He started in this game. Jakar did not play. Aaron played 36 minutes, 35 minutes, a ton of minutes. That's probably too high. That might be already 35. I was right. Good. He played a ton of minutes. He didn't even shoot that well, but he was really important. He was a plus 21, and I know individual plus minus is junk, but the team did well when he was out there because he's able to put pressure on the defense because he hit 40% of his threes. He can get into the paint. He can pass to other guys. He barely turned it over, and he's just fast, and he's in the right places. He's looking a lot better. And he's fitting, like, six shots for Aaron Holiday. That was the least of any starter by a mile. That was less than his brother. That's the same as McDermott. And he played way more minutes than those bench guys. And these are the type of games that show off, to me, the most impressive version of Aaron Holiday, where he shows, like we haven't talked about this in a long time. We talked about this a ton earlier in the season, that he's learning that balance between go, go, shoot, shoot, score. And he has those games every once in a while where he overdoes it. And really be focused on being the team player, being a passer, being a part of the set. And he really was good at that in this game to me. Maybe six shots is honestly a little too low. He's a bit better scorer than that. But against the zone, he never forced it. He would cut around the perimeter to try to get an open three. On defense, he did a good job against the Spurs, smaller guards. And I think I agree with Brogdon. I mean, I know that's the case now. I know they know that effectively. Like, they already figured it out against Portland. I don't think Jakar was supposed to play against the Cavs, and foul trouble made it happen. And then again, Jakar did not play in this one. So I think they figured it out. But I'm glad that we have reached the point. It sucks that an injury, a terrible, terrible injury to Jeremy Lamb was what caused it. But I am glad that finally, after 2 years, we've reached the point where there's nothing blocking Aaron Holiday from playing, right? It made sense to sign Wes Matthews and try to win a series last year. You know, they thought they were good enough to do so. They weren't. It does not make sense to block Aaron's minutes anymore, right? He is good enough to do it. He is growing. He's a sophomore. He's going to be in the rotation sooner rather than later for the Pacers. Now is the time. Get him all the time you can. Throw him in the second unit. Show how good he can be, right? He's playing pretty well in 2020 in general. Let's look at his stats just since the new year started. Just for fun. I'm just making up random arbitrary endpoints here. Yeah, he's shooting 37% from three, 87% from the field, 8 points, 3.5 assists in just 22 minutes a game. So I think per 36, that's something like 14-6. And he's shooting really well from deep and putting pressure on the defense. That was probably some terrible per 36 math. But, you know, he's just electric, and we all know what he can do at his absolute best, right? He won them the game against Boston. And then against Orlando, he did really well in that Toronto game, right? He's been really good at the end of a lot of games. So I'm glad we're at the point where we can finally see Aaron at his full potential, playing a ton of minutes, fitting in with better players, and showing what really he can do and how he can balance being go-go, score, and I'm a good guard who can defer and be a part of the team. So good game from Aaron Holiday. Deserves a lot of praise, and I'm excited to see how he handles the rest of the season and being a player in the playoffs. So he'll probably be the last guy in the playoff rotation and the first guy that would get cut, but we'll see what happens. They'll probably start with nine guys, and we'll see what happens at that point in time. Looking forward to the Bucks tomorrow. It's going to be a really tough game, but the Bucks just lost in Miami. They're going to be pissed. And the rest of this road trip, Pacers, one more win, and they'll have a winning record on this road trip, which would be huge. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. You can follow this show on Twitter at Locked On Pacers and me at T East NBA. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you tomorrow.